The year is 2032. Crime is a thing of the past. The police are useless. Taco Bell reigns supreme. And the only man who can save the day is a cryogenically frozen 90s action hero who wakes up to find that the future is a pastel-colored nightmare. And he just can't figure out the three mysterious seashells. And swearing gets you a ticket? This is Demolition Man, the movie that dared to ask, what if the future was run by Whole Foods customers and the only cure was punching Wesley Snipes through a plate glass window? It's a world where radio stations only play commercial jingles, people shake hands like they're casting spells, and somehow Dennis Leary is the voice of reason. And I'm here to break it all down. My name is Adam, and you're listening to Rewind or Die.
He doesn't know how to use the three seashells.
At the end of a century, ravaged by violence, a society of perfect order will arise. Criminals will be frozen and reprogrammed in cryogenic prisons.
The prisoners are ice cubes. Their criminal instincts are being reprogrammed as they sleep.
Aggression and deviant behavior will be totally eliminated.
He's a criminal the likes of which you have never seen. In a bad time, he was the worst.
I'm gonna love running this place.
But in the year 2032...
This morning, Simon Phoenix escaped from this cryo facility. We are, quite frankly, not equipped to deal with the situation.
Amidst a world of peace and calm...
We're police officers. We're not trained for this kind of violence.
How was the fiendish Simon Phoenix apprehended back in the 20th?
In the end, it took just one man. John Spartan.
You mean the Demolition Man?
The conditions of your parole are full reinstatement into the SAPD and immediate assignment to the apprehension of Simon Phoenix.
Two mortal enemies.
Just dropped in and say hi!
From another time.
Pass is over, John! Time for something new and improved!
Oh, hell.
Will be unleashed on a future that isn't big enough for the both of them. Sylvester Stallone. Wesley Snipes. Demolition Man.
All right, let's get into it. Demolition Man came out in 1993, which means it's got that perfect blend of over-the-top action, unhinged sci-fi world-building, and the subtlety of a brick to the face. It's a movie where the future isn't dystopian so much as it's aggressively annoying. Like, yeah, there's a fascist utopia in charge, but the real horror, no cheeseburgers, no cursing, no real music, and worst of all, everything is corporate sponsored, which honestly is probably the only part they got right. So let's set the scene. It's 1996, and Los Angeles has turned into a full-blown war zone. Enter John Spartan, played by Sylvester Stallone, who in this movie has exactly two modes. Angry yelling, and slightly less angry yelling. He's the ultimate 90s cop cliche. Reckless, destructive, and convinced that the best way to save hostages is by blowing up the entire building they're in. His arch nemesis, Simon Phoenix, played by Wesley Snipes, who looks like he raided Dennis Rodman's closet and injected pure chaos into his veins. He's not just a criminal, he's a cartoon supervillain. He's dropping one-liners, setting people on fire, and somehow making overalls look intimidating. Naturally, Spartan and Phoenix face off, and because John Spartan solves every problem by detonating it, the whole thing ends with a massive explosion. But, turns out a bunch of innocent people were still in the building. So what happens next? Instead of, I don't know, prison, they decide to freeze him in a giant ice cube. Because sure, that's a totally normal legal system. Fast forward to 2032. Society has gone full Pinterest board. Los Angeles is gone, not because of an earthquake, not because of war, but because it got so expensive that the entire city had to merge with San Diego and Santa Barbara just to afford rent. Now it's called San Angeles, and somehow that's one of the least insane things happening in this movie. But crime, gone. Everything? Peaceful. People dress like they live in a high-end yoga retreat, and the only thing more illegal than guns is a harsh tone of voice. Naturally, this is the exact moment some genius decides to thaw out Simon Phoenix. Because nothing bad could possibly come from reviving a guy who treats murder like an improv game. Spoiler, it goes very badly. And because the police of the future are about as useful as a flip phone in a swimming pool, there's only one solution. Bring back John Spartan, the man who solves everything with excessive force and property damage. So now we have our setup. A 90s action hero loose in a sanitized, vegan-friendly future, trying to stop a supervillain while also learning how to use the three seashells. And it only gets weirder from here. Real quick, can we talk about how this movie starts in 1996, and they're already freezing people as a standard legal punishment? Like, this was only 3 years into the future from when the movie came out. They really thought society was just going to wake up one day and say, hey, you know what would solve crime? Cryogenic popsicle prison. Like, forget the fact that our actual prison system in the 90s was all about mandatory minimums and privatization. This movie is out here acting like some judge in 96 just went, prison? Too old-fashioned. Let's go full Captain America with our criminals. And everyone just went with it. And what was the budget on this? Were taxpayers just cool with building an entire frozen murder hotel overnight? Was there a town hall meeting where people debated whether it was a good idea to store the worst criminals in a literal sci-fi vault instead of just, I don't know, putting them in a normal maximum security prison? And why freeze them at all? Like, what's the goal here? It's not rehabilitation. It's not even punishment. You're just turning criminals into time travelers. You're basically saying, hey, you're dangerous now, but what if we unleashed you in 40 years when society has even fewer ways to stop you? Which, surprise, is exactly what happens. All right, let's talk about Wesley Snipes' whole look in this movie. Because my man walks onto the screen looking like Dennis the Menace if he grew up and chose absolute violence. He's got this bright platinum blonde hair, this ridiculous overall jumpsuit situation, and the energy of a Looney Tunes character who just discovered automatic weapons. It's like someone told him, okay, play a psychotic criminal. And he responded with, got it. Okay, Saturday morning cartoon villain. And the best part, Dennis Rodman saw this movie and straight up decided that's how he wanted to do his hair. Like, no joke. Rodman has admitted that he got the idea for his signature bleach blonde look from Demolition Man. So, in a way, this movie is responsible for both future crime-fighting Taco Bell dystopias and late 90s Chicago Bulls aesthetics, which honestly might be its greatest achievement.
You are fined one credit for a violation of the verbal morality statute.
Oh yeah, this movie didn't just give us cryogenic punishment and VR sex. It's somehow also rebranded Taco Bell. So, in Demolition Man, Taco Bell is the only restaurant left after winning something called the Franchise Wars, which is never explained, but clearly ended with the brutal execution of every Burger King and Arby's on the planet. I'd like to think Wendy's didn't go down without a fight. But instead of the grimy, neon-lit Taco Bells we knew in the 90s, the movie gives us this fancy fine dining version with a sleek, futuristic color scheme, purple, blue, and gold, which was wildly different from the bold red, yellow, and green Taco Bell was rocking in real life. And here's the best part. After this movie came out, Taco Bell actually started shifting toward that color scheme in real life. By the late 90s and early 2000s, they phased out the old Southwestern look and leaned into purple and blue tones exactly like the movie. It wasn't an exact copy, but if you look at Taco Bell's branding today, yeah, Demolition Man pretty much set the vibe for modern-day Taco Bell. So to recap, This dumb, beautiful movie didn't just predict corporate monopolies running the world. It actually designed Taco Bell's future, which is either hilarious or deeply concerning, depending on how much Baja Blast is currently in your system. And yet, despite all that, this isn't even the weirdest thing this movie gets right about the future. Oh no. Because now, we need to talk about how Demolition Man took one look at 1993, looked 30 years ahead, and somehow perfectly nailed the worst parts of modern life, including self-driving cars, cancel culture, and people being terrified of touching each other. Yeah, let's get into it.
The year 2032. The city, Los Angeles. The movie, Demolition Man. The restaurant.
All restaurants are Taco Bell.
The reason, delicious tacos, burritos, and nachos.
Exacto mundo.
The prices, only $59, $79, and 99 cents.
I'm impressed.
The action. The adventure. The excitement. It's now playing at a Taco Bell restaurant near you.
So let's talk about something truly disturbing. How this goofy, over-the-top 90s action movie somehow nailed a bunch of things about our actual future. Like, yeah, we don't have cryo prison yet, and Taco Bell isn't the only restaurant yet. But Demolition Man somehow accidentally predicted self-driving cars. Every car in this movie is basically a Tesla in safe mode, complete with fully automated driving, touch screens, and a weird lack of seatbelts. And in 1993, that was pure science fiction. Now, we've got Teslas plowing into medians and Uber testing robot taxis that absolutely will run a red light. The only thing they missed was the part where the car plays terrible radio jingles while you're trapped inside. Cancel culture. Okay, not in the way your uncle complains about on Facebook, but think about it. In this movie, you literally get fined for swearing. Every time someone curses, a machine instantly spits out a ticket because society has decided mean words are the real crime. Sound familiar? It's basically Twitter, but enforced by the government. Social distancing and no-touch culture. All right, this one's scary. Remember how in 2020, suddenly nobody wanted to touch each other. Handshakes vanished overnight, and everyone was like, hey, let's just awkwardly nod instead? Yeah. Demolition Man had that locked down in 1993. In the movie, people don't shake hands. They do this weird air high five thing because physical contact is considered dangerous and unsanitary. So I'm just saying, if I had seen this movie in 2019, I would have started stockpiling toilet paper immediately. Corporate monopoly culture. Okay, this one's brutal. The whole franchise wars joke in the movie where Taco Bell absorbs every other restaurant. It's only slightly exaggerated now. Disney owns everything. Amazon runs the world. And if one day I wake up and see a news headline that says Netflix declares victory over HBO, all shows now legally Netflix originals, I will not even be surprised. The police becoming useless. Okay, not in the way you think. But in this movie, the police literally don't know how to stop crime anymore. They just kind of politely ask criminals to surrender. Because society has gone so long without real crime that the cops are basically hall monitors with stun guns. And I don't know if you've ever seen those robot security guards rolling around in malls doing absolutely nothing, but we're halfway there already. Oh. So yeah, this dumb action movie, the one where Sylvester Stallone gets his ass kicked by a future toilet, somehow called a bunch of things about real life. I don't know whether to be impressed or terrified, but either way, I'm blaming Demolition Man the next time a robot dog starts chasing me down the street. All right, let's take a break, and when we come back, we're diving into the absolute bonkers chemistry between Stallone and Sandra Bullock, the weirdest sex scene ever filmed, and of course, the legend himself, Sir Nigel Hawthorne, playing a villain so smug you want to punch him through a window. Stay tuned. All right, so let's talk about something truly disturbing. Oh, and before we move on, I gotta talk about one casting choice that completely breaks my brain every time I watch this movie. So, the guy who plays the chief of police in the future? Yeah, that's Bob Gunton, a.k.a. the warden from The Shawshank Redemption. You know, the most corrupt, evil, Bible-quoting piece of human garbage ever put on film? The guy who spends that whole movie being so cartoonishly evil that you're practically cheering when he eats a bullet at the end? Yeah, well, in Demolition Man, he's just a nice, normal, confused police chief who genuinely doesn't know what to do when a criminal punches a guy instead of filling out a misconduct form, and it throws me off every single time. Like, I cannot trust this man. I keep waiting for him to secretly be working for Wesley Snipes, or for Stallone to find a hidden tunnel behind his desk filled with stolen parole paperwork and embezzled cryo-prison funds. I don't care how polite or clueless he's acting. I refuse to believe that the warden of Shawshank is just some guy trying his best. I know this man has a Swiss bank account full of Taco Bell stock, and I know he's got at least one secret underground murder project going on. Anyway, just wanted to get that off my chest. All right. Now that I've thoroughly convinced myself that the Shawshank warden is up to some future crime, let's move on, because we need to talk about something even more unbelievable than Taco Bell world domination or self-driving cars. That's right. It's time to discuss the most awkward, least sexy, and most hilariously futuristic sex scene ever filmed. Sylvester Stallone, Sandra Bullock, and VR headsets. Let's break it down. All right, folks, buckle up, because we need to talk about the single weirdest sex scene in action movie history. A scene so profoundly unsexy that it circles all the way back around into being hilarious. So let's set the stage. Sylvester Stallone's John Spartan, a man whose entire personality is just punching through problems and yelling about the past, has been thawed out in this weird, sterile, touch-free future. He's just trying to do his job, eat some non-Taco Bell food, and figure out what the hell the three seashells are, when suddenly Sandra Bullock's character, Lenina Huxley, invites him back to her apartment. Now, if you're watching this for the first time, you're probably thinking, oh, okay, this is the part where they hook up. You'd be so, so wrong. Because instead of doing literally anything normal, she hands him a weird sci-fi VR headset, tells him to put it on, and suddenly, bam, he's trapped in a full-on psychedelic cybersex fever dream. I cannot stress enough how insane this scene is. Stallone is sitting there, sweating and confused, while trippy neon lights flash around his head, like he's trying to download pleasure from the Matrix. Meanwhile, Bullock is just vibing, fully enjoying it, while Stallone looks like he's about to have a stress aneurysm. And then he rips the headset off. What the hell was that? Where's the physical contact? And this is when we get the absolute golden revelation that in this future, people don't actually touch when they get busy. Oh no, fluid exchange is outlawed. That's right. This society has banned sex and replaced it with Wi-Fi-enabled brain zapping because physical intimacy is unsanitary. And look, I get that this movie was trying to be satirical, but I cannot unsee the fact that we basically invented this exact scenario. Because tell me this isn't just the world's first metaverse hookup. Like, replace the sci-fi helmets with a MetaQuest VR rig, throw in a few NFTs for some reason, and congratulations, you've just unlocked Mark Zuckerberg's dream version of Tinder. Anyway, Stallone rightfully freaks out, demands old-school, 90s style, Schwarzenegger-approved physical contact, and Sandra Bullock reacts like he just suggested committing tax fraud in broad daylight. And then she kicks him out of her apartment because apparently being into actual human touch makes you a total pervert in 2032. So, yeah, that happened. And it only raises more questions. Like, if this is the approved method, how do they make babies? Are test tubes just everywhere? Are there government-regulated Tinder matches? And most importantly, who was making the VR headset porn in the first place? These are the deep existential questions that Demolition Man forces us to ask. Okay, hold up. We need to talk about Sandra Bullock's apartment. Because in the middle of all the weird, minimalist future furniture and totally normal VR sex headsets, there's something that completely breaks the logic of this movie. She has a Red Hot Chili Peppers poster. Now, if this was any other future, sure, that'd be fine. Sandra Bullock's character is obviously obsessed with the 90s, so it tracks. But this is a world where all music has been replaced by commercial jingles. That's the only thing they listen to. No rock, no rap, no pop. Just fully grown adults bopping along to the Oscar Mayer Wiener song like it's a number one Billboard hit. So now I have questions. Does she even know what the Red Hot Chili Peppers sound like? Does she think they only sang about hamburgers and laundry detergent? Was there a point in history where Anthony Kiedis tried to survive the franchise wars and lost to a Taco Bell radio jingle? And look, I get that Demolition Man isn't exactly focused on airtight world building, but this detail haunts me. Every time I see that poster, I imagine future cops busting into a basement, confiscating contraband bootleg CDs, and some poor dude getting dragged away screaming, "You can take my body, but you'll never take my blood sugar sex magic." Anyway, just had to get that off my chest. All right. When we come back, we're diving into the villains of this movie because Wesley Snipes is having the time of his life. But Nigel Hawthorne, that man is playing the smuggest British weasel in cinematic history, and I love him for it.
You seem very much alone, John Spartan, but things aren't all that different. Perhaps you'd like to hear an oldie station. Oldies?
Oh, what a relief!
Oh, this is the most popular station in town. Wall-to-wall mini-tunes. You call them commercials.
Here's that classic you've all been waiting for. The number one request of the day. Armor hot dogs.
Kids eat Armor hot dogs.
Oh, wow, this is my fave.
Kids who climb on rocks. Dog kids, sissy kids.
Even kids with chicken pox love hot dogs.
Armor hot dogs.
The dogs, kids, love
All right, let's talk about the real reason this movie works. Wesley Snipes as Simon Phoenix. This man is not just playing a villain. Oh, no. He is having the absolute time of his life. From the second he steps on screen, he is chewing the scenery like it's made of actual candy. He's running around like a hyperactive 10-year-old on a sugar rush, cracking jokes, setting people on fire and dressing like he just raided the clearance rack at a rejected MC Hammer clothing line. And I know I already mentioned this, but that hair, the bright platinum blonde Dennis the Menace hair, it makes him look like he's about to steal Mr. Wilson's wallet and commit a felony at the same time. Now, in any other movie, a performance this over the top would be too much. But in Demolition Man, it's perfect. Because while Stallone is out here playing angry, confused caveman, Snipes is out here doing backflips, hacking ATMs, and acting like a video game character that escaped from an arcade machine. And that brings us to another hilarious plot point. Simon Phoenix gets woken up in the future. And for some reason, the cryo prison has magically programmed him with every skill he could possibly need to become an unstoppable supervillain. Scientists are just like, "Oh yeah, while you were frozen, we just happened to upload a bunch of expert combat training, hacking skills, and martial arts knowledge into your brain. No reason, it just seemed fun." Who the hell thought that was a good idea? Seriously, why did they do this? The whole reason they froze him was because he was too dangerous. And some genius at future NASA decided to turn him into a superhuman murder machine just for kicks. This is like if you locked up a serial arsonist and thought, "Hey, while he's in here, let's also make him a master electrician just for funsies." So now we've got Wesley Snipes, unstoppable, unhinged, and having an absolute blast. And the cops are so incompetent that they basically just watch him commit crimes and take notes like they're studying for a test. And that brings us to one of the best moments in the entire movie. Simon Phoenix gets confronted by a group of future cops who literally don't know what to do because violent crime hasn't existed in 40 years. So they just stand there, politely reading instructions from a tablet like they're trying to defuse a bomb using a YouTube tutorial. "Simon Phoenix, you are under arrest. Please remain calm while we gently detain you using our approved de-escalation methods." And Snipes just laughs, because in this world, nobody knows how to fight anymore. He slaps them around like a cartoon villain, steals a gun, and immediately hacks the city's computer system like it's Windows 95. So now we've got a psycho killer dressed like a rejected Street Fighter character. Stallone is still thawing out and trying to figure out how toilets work. And the entire city is about 5 minutes away from collapsing because nobody in 2032 knows how to handle a single maniac with a machine gun. And it only gets crazier from here. Okay, so this question to me is interesting. Does this movie have too many villains? Like, you watch Demolition Man thinking Wesley Snipes is the big bad, right? And yeah, he's out here committing war crimes while dressed like a rejected X-Men character. But then suddenly, bam. There's also a smug British overlord pulling the strings. Enter Dr. Raymond Cocteau, played by Sir Nigel Hawthorne, a man who looks like he should be grading essays at Hogwarts, but is instead running an entire city like it's an HOA meeting from hell. And here's where things get complicated. Because who's the real villain here? Simon Phoenix? Absolutely. He's a walking Grand Theft Auto cheat code, having the time of his life wrecking this weird utopia. Dr. Cocteau? Oh, definitely. He's basically an evil Steve Jobs, banning swearing, outlawing spicy food, and turning the world into a soulless corporate-sponsored wellness retreat where nobody gets to have fun. And then, on top of that, we've also got Dennis Leary as Edgar Friendly, the leader of the underground resistance, who isn't a villain, but is introduced like one. At first, we're supposed to think he's some dangerous terrorist. But then we find out, oh, wait, he just wants cheeseburgers and to be left alone. I don't know if I've ever related to a movie character more. So now, instead of one clear villain, we've got Simon Phoenix, a literal supervillain who murders for fun, Dr. Cocteau, a passive-aggressive cult leader who wants the world to be one giant Whole Foods, Edgar Friendly, a guy who just wants to drink beer and not have to eat rat burgers, but gets treated like an enemy. Like, at a certain point, this movie is less good versus evil and more a battle royale of different levels of annoying. Do you side with the psychotic criminal who's having way too much fun? Do you side with the condescending dictator who just wants everyone to act like it's a Peloton commercial? Or do you side with Dennis Leary, who's basically playing himself and just wants to be left alone with a pack of cigarettes? Anyway, I love that Demolition Man just said, screw it. Let's throw in every type of villain and see what happens. And you know what? It works. All right, we need to talk about Nigel Hawthorne's Dr. Cocteau because this man is peak smugness and somehow manages to be more punchable than Simon Phoenix, which should be impossible.
See, according to Cocteau's plan, I'm the enemy because I like to think. I like to read. I'm into freedom of speech and freedom of choice. I'm the kind of guy who likes to sit in a greasy spoon and wonder, gee, should I have the T-bone steak or the jumbo rack of barbecue ribs with the side order of gravy fries? I want high cholesterol. I want to eat bacon and butter and buckets of cheese, okay? I want to smoke a Cuban cigar the size of Cincinnati in the non-smoking section. I want to run through the streets naked with green jello all over my body reading Playboy magazine. Why? Because I suddenly might feel the need to, okay, pal? I've seen the future. You know what it is? It's a 47-year-old virgin sitting around in his beige pajamas drinking a banana broccoli shake singing, I'm an Oscar Mayer wiener.
Dr. Raymond Cocteau. Because this man might be the most passive-aggressively evil villain ever put in a sci-fi movie. This dude isn't threatening like Simon Phoenix. He doesn't throw punches, doesn't have a cool fight scene, doesn't even look scary. No, he's worse. He's smug. He's condescending. He's the kind of villain who would smile while raising your rent for aesthetic reasons. Imagine if a tech billionaire, a cult leader, and your most insufferable college professor merged into one, and boom, you've got Cocteau. Now, in theory, he's supposed to be the guy who saved society. He eliminated crime, got rid of disease, made people polite. But what he actually did was turn the future into a sanitized hellscape where nobody can swear, nobody can eat spicy food, and apparently, you have to listen to Burger King jingles in your car instead of music. And the worst part? He is so proud of himself This guy walks around his pastel-colored empire acting like he single-handedly invented civilization while conveniently ignoring the fact that every single person who disagrees with him is now living underground eating rat burgers. Oh, and let's talk about his genius master plan. Because instead of dealing with Simon Phoenix himself, what does Cocteau do? Step one, unfreeze the most dangerous criminal of the 20th century. Step two, give him a literal cheat code so he can't be stopped. Step three, expect him to behave like an obedient attack dog. I wonder how that worked out. Literally anyone could have told this man, hey, maybe don't give Wesley Snipes in full murder clown mode unlimited power. But nope, he's so sure of himself, so smug, that he doesn't even have a backup plan. And in classic I am too rich and powerful to suffer consequences fashion, he gets exactly what's coming to him when Phoenix just straight up kills him mid-sentence. Oh, Simon, I programmed you to obey me, so obviously, I'm dead. No monologue, no epic downfall, just instant hilarious karma. Honestly, one of the most satisfying villain deaths ever. This man spent the entire movie acting like he was untouchable, and the second things don't go his way, he folds like a cheap lawn chair. And that, my friends, is what happens when you base your entire dictatorship on the idea that nothing bad can ever happen to you. All right, we're nearing the finish line, but there's still one more thing we have to talk about. The absolute nonsense that is this movie's ending. Because after all the explosions, all the dystopian chaos, and all the weird VR sex, we have to ask, did Demolition Man actually solve anything? All right, so let's take a step back and ask the big question. Did Demolition Man actually solve anything? Like after all the chaos, all the explosions, and all the rat burger resistance revolutions, does anyone actually know what the hell they're supposed to do next? Because let's look at the ending. Simon Phoenix is dead. Dr. Cocteau is extra dead. The cops are completely useless, and society is just standing around confused. So Stallone gives his big final speech where the cops and the underground rebels are basically staring at each other like an awkward high school dance. And what does he say? As Stallone, gruff and confident, you guys should just figure it out. That's it. That's the solution. No plan. No structure. Just maybe meet somewhere in the middle. Oh, okay, cool. Thanks, John Spartan. I'm sure that'll totally work out and won't immediately descend into absolute chaos the second you leave town. Like, what happens next? Do people just start swearing in the streets for fun? Are cops suddenly allowed to tackle people again? Is Taco Bell still in charge? And most importantly, did they ever figure out the three seashells? So, to answer the question, no. This movie does not solve a damn thing. It just blows everything up and leaves the pieces for someone else to clean up, which honestly might be the most accurate thing about this entire movie. All right, final thoughts coming up. Let's wrap this thing up. Talk about its legacy and ask the most important question. Is Demolition Man a masterpiece or just the weirdest Taco Bell commercial ever made? Stick around.
In the future, you have to defrost a cop to put a criminal on ice. Sylvester Stallone is John Spartan, the Demolition Man. The toughest cop in the 21st century. But Wesley Snipes is cold-blooded Simon Phoenix.
Silence is free! Now fry like a chicken.
But Demolition Man always keeps his cool.
Hey, you didn't say Simon Says.
The future isn't big enough for the both of them. Demolition Man, figures of Bola Jet each sold separately, new from Mattel.
So let's talk legacy, because somehow this movie, the one with the three seashells, the fast food dystopia, and Stallone trying to understand the concept of toilet paper, has only gotten more relevant over time. Now, I'm not saying Demolition Man was trying to predict the future, but if you look around in 2025, social media acting like the swearing police, check. Weird corporate monopolies taking over everything, check. Self-driving cars that are more terrifying than helpful? Check. people afraid of touching each other? Yeah, this movie was supposed to be a goofy sci-fi action flick. But somehow, it ended up being a shockingly accurate warning about how stupid the future could get. But here's the thing. It's still an action movie. And that's where Demolition Man really cements itself, because it doesn't just exist as a wow. They really called that piece of sci-fi. It also holds up as a damn fun action movie. Stallone is great in it. Snipes is having the time of his life. The set pieces go hard. And even though the movie is pure satire, it still delivers where it counts. Which brings us to the Action Hero Hall of Fame, the Core Four. When you talk about the pantheon of action hero gods, there are four names that absolutely belong at the top. Arnold Schwarzenegger, the gold standard, the one-man wrecking crew, the guy who redefined what an action star looked like in the 80s and 90s, the Terminator, Conan, Dutch from Predator. If you're making an action movie and Arnold isn't the measuring stick, you're doing it wrong. Bruce Willis, the everyman badass, the working class action hero. He wasn't a bodybuilder or a martial artist. He was just a dude, sweaty, bloody, barefoot, pissed off. Die Hard made him the guy you wanted on your side when things went south. Sylvester Stallone, the wild card, could do serious drama in its own way anyway. Rocky, First Blood, could do cartoonishly violent insanity. Cobra, over the top, and somehow could do both at the same time. He was the guy who could throw himself into something as ridiculous as Demolition Man and still make it work. Kurt Russell, the cool one. He wasn't the biggest. He wasn't the strongest, but he had swagger for days. Jack Burton, Snake Plissken, MacReady. He didn't care what anyone else was doing. He just showed up, stole the movie, and walked away looking cooler than everyone else. Where does Demolition Man fit into Stallone's legacy? Here's the thing. Stallone didn't have to do this movie. He could have spent the 90s playing it safe, doing gritty, ultra-serious, muscle-bound action movies. But instead, he leaned into the weird. He let the movie make fun of his image. He played a fish-out-of-water action hero in a dystopian future. He fought Wesley Snipes while also being confused about Taco Bell. And it worked. Because Demolition Man is goofy. But it's also good. It's funny, fast-paced, packed with action, and it proves that Stallone wasn't just a one-note action guy. Like, tell me anyone else who could go from fighting Wesley Snipes in a frozen prison battle to yelling about Taco Bell and still look cool doing it. So no, this isn't Cliffhanger. It's not Rocky. It's not First Blood. But Demolition Man? This is Stallone in peak having fun mode. And honestly, that might be the best version of him. Unless you count Oscar, a comedy that Demolition Man somehow manages to be funnier than, despite technically not even being a comedy. All right, that's a wrap. But before we go, one final question. How the hell did Taco Bell win the franchise wars? And why is that the only part of this movie we don't talk about enough? So let's make it official. Where does Demolition Man rank in the Rewind or Die Hall of Fame? Because this isn't just about, is it a great movie? This is about, does it belong among the absolute legends of ridiculous, over-the-top, endlessly rewatchable cinema? And honestly, yes, yes, it does. Here's why. One, it's the perfect blend of stupid and smart. Some movies try to be high-concept sci-fi, but forget to be fun. Some movies try to be dumb action flicks, but forget to be clever. Demolition Man nails the balance. It's ridiculous, but it knows exactly what it's doing. It's dumb, but it's also way smarter than it had any right to be. It's over the top, but it's also shockingly well thought out. This movie could have been a mess, but instead, it accidentally became one of the most quotable, rewatchable, ahead of its time action flicks ever made. Two, it gave us Wesley Snipes at 1,000%. Wesley Snipes didn't just play Simon Phoenix. He took the role and ran with it like he robbed a bank. He's a walking cartoon villain in the best way possible. He looks like he escaped from a rejected Street Fighter game. He treats murder like an arcade game and is having the time of his life. Seriously, you could put Simon Phoenix in a Batman movie and nobody would question it. That's how committed Snipes is. Three, It lets Stallone have fun. Stallone's action movies usually go one of two ways. Super serious. First Blood, Cliffhanger, Copland. Comic book insanity. Cobra over the top, Judge Dredd. Demolition Man is the rare case where he gets to do both. He's a badass action hero. He's also confused as hell about the future. He spends the whole movie trying to understand the world while also punching people through windows. And that is why it works. 4. It's a movie that only gets better with time. Some action movies feel stuck in the 90s. Some action movies get outdated fast. Some action movies stop being fun once you've seen them a few times. But Demolition Man? The future gets dumber every year, so this movie only makes more sense. The jokes hit harder because we're kind of living in this dystopia now. The action holds up because practical stunts will always look better than CGI trash. This isn't a movie you watch once. This is a movie you throw on once a year and still laugh at every single time. Final verdict. It's a lock for the Rewind or Die Hall of Fame. This isn't just a fun action movie. It's an essential one. It's quotable. It's rewatchable. It's way smarter than it looks. It's pure 90s action insanity at its finest. So yes, welcome to the Hall of Fame, Demolition Man. Now, if someone could just explain the three seashells, that would be great. Producer Steve, what did Demolition Man make at the box office?
$159 million worldwide. Pretty solid for 93. Are we done?
Hold on. What do you think of this movie?
I think it's a fun, ridiculous 90s action flick that you are way too emotionally invested in.
No. Is it a dystopian sci-fi masterpiece, or do you hate fun?
I think you just talked about Taco Bell's color scheme for 10 whole minutes.
Because it matters, Steve.
It does not matter. It's a 30-year-old movie where Wesley Snipes kills people while dressed like a rejected Street Fighter character. And I'm only saying that because you used that analogy 3 times.
Yeah. And it's also shockingly accurate about our modern society.
Uh-huh. You might be overstating it a little bit. I'm sure the screenwriter was sitting there thinking, how can I perfectly predict the rise of AI policing while also making sure Stallone yells about seashells?
Okay, smart guy, answer me this. If someone banned swearing tomorrow, how fast do you think you'd rack up fines
before lunch and I'd deserve them?
Exactly! That's Demolition Man. That's our world, Steve.
I need you to go outside.
Absolutely not!
Wait. This is the first Stallone movie you wanted to cover, not Rocky, not First Blood, not even Cliffhanger?
Damn right I did.
Why?
Because do any of those movies feature Stallone waking up in a nightmare utopia where swearing gets you a parking ticket, toilet paper has been replaced with mystery seashells, and Taco Bell is a luxury establishment?
Number.
Exactly.
You didn't even consider Cobra? Or Tango and Cash?
What, you think I should have started with the one where Stallone cuts his pizza with scissors and mumbles like a hitman with a sinus infection?
I mean, yes.
As much as I want to cover every one of these movies, I can't just sit in a bunker and record them all at once.
I definitely don't want that.
Want to know what's up next?
Next for what?
Next episode. We're flipping the script.
Oh God, what now?
Dune. Nope, not that Dune. David Lynch's Dune.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah. We're going deep on giant sandworms, whispered inner monologues, and Sting wearing nothing but space underwear.
Why do you do this?
Because somebody has to.
They don't. They really don't.
Too late, Steve. We're heading to Arrakis.
I hate this job.
And I love this show.
Look, I get it. Adam loves movies. That's why we're here. That's why this show exists. But sometimes, I feel like I need to step in and remind him that not every movie is a misunderstood masterpiece. Because here's the thing. Every episode starts off normal. We're breaking down an action movie. We're talking about the cast, the explosions, whatever. And then, out of nowhere, Adam locks in on something absolutely insane, like the Taco Bell color scheme in Demolition Man. And suddenly we're 10 minutes deep into a conspiracy theory about how this movie secretly shaped modern corporate branding. And listen, I try to let him cook, but I think moving forward, I might have to start, I don't know, reining him in a little, because if I don't, we're like two episodes away from him declaring Super Mario Brothers from 1993 one of the most important films of our time.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Adam, buddy, what did I just listen to? I thought Rewind or Die was about breaking down movies, not declaring them national treasures like you're submitting them to the Library of Congress. Look, Demolition Man is fun. It's a solid 90s action movie. It's goofy, it's clever, it's got Wesley Snipes treating murder like an extreme sport. I enjoy it. But you made it sound like it belongs in the same conversation as 2001, A Space Odyssey. And Taco Bell's rebranding? Adam, you spent, what, 10 minutes on that? You have a producer. Steve exists. He should be stopping you. I say this with love. You cannot keep doing this. If you let your movie obsession go unchecked, you're going to wake up one day and find out you've done a 4-hour special on Street Fighter, the movie. Which brings me to my next point. You cannot cover David Lynch's Dune without me in studio. I refuse to let you Lynch-splain this movie without me there to keep things objective. You're not just going to do Dune the way you did Demolition Man, where you convince yourself it's a misunderstood classic and spend half the episode defending Sting's metal bikini. So here's what's going to happen. You're waiting for me. We do this right. Together. In person. I will fly there if I have to. If you try to record this episode without me, I swear to God I will break into the feed mid-episode and start reading from Dune Messiah until you physically cut my mic. Call me back, and don't do anything stupid.
You are fined 1 credit for a violation of the verbal morality statute.
Hey, thanks for listening to Rewind or Die. There's always a new episode every Monday, so don't miss out. Remember to subscribe on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Producer Steve hopes you have enjoyed this program.